Welcome back to The Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We are talking about part 5, chapter 16, Oh Dear, Kitty Likes to Scratch. that's the dumbest discussion prompt that I've ever given you guys. I appreciate you guys actually having a conversation around it. Swims to the Mama Fishy said, ha, I almost didn't get the allusion slash pun and was busily climbing onto my high horse to deliver a lecture about being so dismissive of a women's legitimate concern, but then, oh, that is really funny. Oh, thank you. Lichtschatz, in their analysis of this chapter, had this to say. Neither Levin nor Kitty is the head of the household. They have equal power. He was symbolized during their marriage ceremony when they stepped on... during their marriage ceremony when they stepped onto the pink silk at the same time. Yeah, there was that whole thing about whoever steps on first is the... wears the pants, so to speak. And they both stepped on at the same time. It's good that Tolstoy shows us a Kitty that stands up for who she is and what she believes. Best lines. And where you can go, I can. You always attribute bad and vile motives to me. I am all right, not weak or anything. She did not agree to anything he said. And Tolstoy's sly comedic line, no, this is awful, being a sort of slave, unable to restrain his annoyance any longer, but immediately conscious he had dealt a blow to himself. I believe Kitty will make Levin a better man, as long as he can get over himself. I'm on Team Kitty. JMama8779 said, good analysis. Being a new husband, I can relate to the often bumbling decisions that Levin makes. It takes time to think as a partnership instead of individually. Agreed about being on Team Kitty, says Simply Productive. When Levin read the letter, I automatically assumed that he would go on his own to say goodbye to his brother. That being said, Levin had handled the situation horribly, refusing to just see that his wife wanted to support him. That is so interesting, says Swim, said the Mama Fishy. I automatically assumed, of course, she would go. We should remember Kitty's time with Varenka, per Schmoop. Varenka is the real deal. She's good and self-sacrificing and charitable. Varenka gives Kitty the opportunity to learn that the best thing she can do is to follow what her heart is telling her to do. I've been around the block a few times. Kitty recognizes that Levin's brother needs more help than just a goodbye at this point. Probably because women usually attended to sickness and death. I believe Levin is dismissive of her because of her youth. I am Norwegian said, I assumed that Levin's brother is finally at death's door and that there isn't more to do than say goodbye. If it was my brother, I'd want to sit there alone. If it was really just a goodbye. If we had days, then I'd want to bring my wife. Gwynardle said, I assumed she would go too, and it made me so happy that she stood her ground. Yeah. I mean, what they're in strange territory, aren't they? Like, someone as close as a brother dying. You know, you hear reports. I've never been through something like that, but you hear people say things like, you don't really know what to do or how to act or, like, what's the etiquette or protocol around it. And so everything feels awkward. You don't even sort of know how to grieve or how to present yourself. And it's hard to be around other people in proximity to the person dying because you kind of don't know how to act around each other in relation to that person. I've heard it's very, very awkward. Add into the mix, so that's uncharted territory for them, I suppose. I mean, I don't really know, but it's still awkward territory. And also it's uncharted territory that they're newlyweds and they're still figuring out this whole dynamic of their married relationship. And so they're feeling it out. Like, they don't really know how to act in these moments. My book is on the ground, so I need to get it. Oh, why is the ground so far away? I have retrieved I have retrieved the book. And I'm now going to read you chapter 17, which goes exactly like this. The hotel in which the provincial town where Nicholas Levin was lying ill was one of those provincial hotels arranged after new and improved models, with the best intentions of cleanliness, comfort, and even elegance, but which, owing to the people who use them, very soon degenerate into mere dirty pothouses with pretensions to modern improvements, these very pretensions making them worse than the old-fashioned inns which were simply dirty. This hotel had already reached this stage. Everything, the soldier in the dirty uniform, smoking a cigarette at the front door, acting as a hall porter, the dismal and unpleasant ornamental cast-iron staircase, the free-and-easy waiter in a dirty dress coat, the general room with a dusty bouquet of wax flowers decorating the table, the dust and slovenliness everywhere, mingled with a kind of modern, self-satisfied, railway-induced state of bustle. All this caused a feeling of depression in the Levins after their fresh home life, especially as the air of artificiality about this hotel was quite irreconcilable with what was awaiting them. As usual, after the inquiry as to what priced rooms they desired, it turned out that there was not a single good room vacant. One good room was occupied by a railway inspector, another by a lawyer from Moscow, a third by the Princess Astafievna from the country. There was just one dirty room There was just one dirty room to be had, but they were promised that an adjoining one would be free by the evening. Vexed with his wife because his expectations were being realized, namely that at the moment of arrival, when his heart was seized with agitation at the thought of his brother's condition, he was obliged to consider her instead of running to him at once. Levin led her to the room. "Go, go," she said with a timid, guilty look at him. I just lost my spot because I looked over my shoulder. "Go, go," she said with a timid, guilty look at him. He went out silently, and at the very door came upon Mary Nikolovna, who had heard of his arrival, but had not dared to enter. She was just the same as he had seen her in Moscow, the same stuffed dress without collar or cuffs, and the same kindly, dull, pockmarked face, only somewhat stouter. "Well, how is he? What is it?" "Very bad. Does not get up. He was expecting you all the time. Are with your wife?" For a moment he did not understand the cause of her confusion, but she immediately explained it. I will go to the kitchen. She brought out. He will be pleased. He heard and he knows and remembers her abroad." Levin understood that she referred to his wife and did not know what to say. "Come along, come," he said. But he hardly moved when the door opened and Kitty looked out. Levin blushed with shame and vexation at his wife for having placed herself and him in this awkward position. But Mary Nikolovna blushed still more. She shrank together, flushed till tears filled her eyes, and seized the ends of her shawl, began twisting them in her red fingers, not knowing what to say or do. At the first glance, Levin saw an expression of eager curiosity in the look with which Kitty gazed at this incomprehensible and terrible woman. But it lasted only an instant. "Well, how is he? How is he?" she said, addressing first her husband and then the woman. "Dear me, we can't talk in the corridor," said Levin, looking crossly at a man who was just passing along with jerky steps, ostensibly on business of his own. "Well then, come in," said Kitty to Mary Nikolovna, who had regained her self-control. "Or, better still, you go on and send for me," she continued, noticing her husband's frightened look, and then returned to their room. Levin went to his brother. He had not expected what he saw and felt when he reached his brother's side. He had expected to find him in that state of self-deception which he had heard was frequent in consumptive cases, and which had so struck him at the time of his brother's visit to him in the autumn. He had expected to find the physical signs of approaching death more definite, greater weakness, greater emaciation, but still the same sort of condition generally. He had expected to feel the same sorrow at the loss of a loved brother and the same horror of death he had then experienced, but to a greater degree, and had prepared himself for all this, but what he found was quite different. In the dirty little room with a painted dado spotted with spittle, behind the thin partition wall of which could be heard the sound of voices in stuffy, smelly, foul air, on a bed drawn away from the wall lay a body covered with a blanket. One arm of that body lay outside the blanket, and the enormous hand, like a rake, seemed to be attached in some incomprehensible way to a long, thin spindle that was quite straight from the end to the middle. The head lay on its side on the pillow. Levin could see the moist, thin hair on the temples and the drawn, transparent-looking forehead. "Impossible that this terrible body can be my brother Nicholas," he thought. But he drew nearer, saw the face, and doubt was no longer possible. In spite of the dreadful change on the face, Levin had only to glance at those living eyes raised towards him, to notice the slight movement of the mouth beneath the clammy moustache, in order to understand the dreadful truth that this dead body was his living brother. The glittering eyes glanced severely and reproachfully at the brother who was entering, and this glance immediately established living relations between living people. Levin at once felt the reproach in the look fixed on him, and a sense of repentance because of his own happiness. When Constantine took him by the hand, Nicholas smiled. The smile was very faint, hardly perceptible, and in spite of it, the stern expression of the eyes did not change. "You did not expect to find me like this," he said, speaking with difficulty. "Yes, no," said Levin, confusing his words. "How is it you did not let me know sooner? I mean, at the time of my marriage, I inquired for you everywhere." He was impelled to speak in order not to remain silent, but did not know what to say, especially as his brother made no reply, but only gazed fixedly at him, evidently trying to fathom the meaning of every word. Levin told his brother that his wife had come with him. Nicholas seemed pleased at this, but said he was afraid the condition he was in might frighten her. A silence followed. Nicholas moved and began to talk. From his expression, Levin expected him to say something specially significant and important, but Nicholas only talked about his health. He found fault with the doctor and regretted that he could not have a celebrated Moscow doctor. So Levin understood that he was still hoping. Taking advantage of the first moment of silence, Levin got up, wishing to free himself, if only for a few minutes, from his painful sensations, and said he would fetch his wife. "All right, and I will have the place cleaned up a bit. It is dirty here, and it smells, I should think. Masha, tidy up," said the invalid, with an effort. "And when you have finished, go away," he added, with a questioning look at his brother. Levin did not reply. He went out and stopped in the corridor. He had said he would bring his wife, but now, analysing the impressions he was experiencing, he made up his mind that he would, on the contrary, try to dissuade her from entering the sick room. "Why should she too be tortured as I am?" he reflected. "Well, how is he?" Kitty asked with a frightened look. "Oh, it's awful." "Awful? Why did you come?" said Levin. Kitty was silent a moment, looking timidly and pitifully at her husband. Then she approached and took hold of his elbow with both hands. "Kostya, take me to him. It will be easier for us to bear it together. Just take me there and then go away," she began. "Try and realize that for me to see you and not to see him is much more painful. There I can perhaps be of use to him. And you, please let me," she entreated, as if her happiness depended on it. He was obliged to yield, and having recovered and quite forgotten Mary Nikolovna, He returned with Kitty to his brother, stepping lightly and glancing repeatedly at her husband, showing him a brave face full of sympathy. She entered the sick room and, turning without haste, noiselessly closed the door. With noiseless steps, she advanced towards the bedside, went round so that he need not turn his head, and at once, grasping his enormous skeleton hand with her fresh young one, pressed it, and with that sympathetic, quiet animation which gives no offence and is natural only to women, he began to talk to him. She began to talk to him. "It was in Soden we met, but we are not acquainted," she said. "You little thought I should one day be your sister." "You would not have known me again," he asked, with a smile that had lit up his face at her entrance. "Oh, yes, I should. What a good thing it is that you did send us word. Not a day passed without Kostya's thinking and being anxious about you." The sick man's animation did not last long. She had not finished speaking before that stern, reproachful look of jealousy felt by the dead, by the dying, for the living, settled on his face. "I'm afraid you are not quite comfortable here," she said, turning away from his penetrating glance and looking round the room. "We shall have to ask the landlord for another room and see that we are nearer to each other," she said to her husband. Alrighty. There we go, another chapter done, skis. Not happy times, but it's good that Kitty is sort of pushing for them to work as a team. We were just saying earlier in the conversation about, I can't remember whose comment was it about it being at that whose comment was it? I'm going to find it. Oh, Jay Mama. "Takes time to think as a partnership instead of individually." And Kitty seems to be taking the lead on the partnership approach, trying to set some precedents about them working as a team rather than working as two individuals, and good on her. Team Kitty, all the way. Alright, that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Go have a chat over on the thingy-majing, and I'll see you tomorrow.